Blog Talk Radio.
Let your hands for Angela.
Today's guest is Dr. Rufus Woods, or Pastor Woods. He is the president of the Bay County NAACP. Pastor Woods is on the show now, and how are you, Dr. Woods?
Good morning, Ms. Butler. I am doing quite well, and thank you so very much for the invitation to share.
You're more than welcome. Now, you're president of the NAACP in a different region that I'm in with the NAACP. My president is somebody else from Defiant Springs. But you're over the Bay County branch.
Right. The branch that covers your area is known as the North Florida branch, which covers Walton County, Washington County, and Holmes County here in the panhandle of Florida. And, of course, as you said, I am serving as the president of the Bay County branch, and I live here in Panama City, Florida. And, of course, we have seven municipalities right here in the Panama City area, which makes up Bay County. So I'm very honored and very humbled to serve as the president.
Yes, sir, and you do a wonderful job.
Well, thank you. We're doing the best
now,
we can.
Yes, sir. How is it in Panama Bay County, in your opinion, with the school systems? And I hate to go this far back 6 or 7 years ago, but I'd like to touch on Martin Anderson, the 14-year-old that was, he died in the boot camp in Panama City, Florida. Am I correct?
Right. That was one of the, probably the most high-profile case that our branch has ever had to address. Martin Lee Anderson, as you pointed out, was a 14-year-old young man here in Bay County who was placed at the Bay County juvenile boot camp at that time. Of course, it's no longer in operation. It was under the jurisdiction of the Bay County Sheriff's Department. It was a boot camp. Martin was there. Martin had, you know, been in trouble, as teenagers will do. I mean, I can go back to my teen days. I did some things perhaps that I should not have done. Really, it was nothing major. I think the last thing that he did was he stole his grandmother's car and took it on a joyride. But he was a teenager. But unfortunately, his mother placed him at the boot camp, you know, seeking help for him because she knew he needed some help. But on the first day, I think it was January the 5th, 2006, Martin was compelled to run like all of the other young men had to run at that time, and he complained of not being able to complete the laps that he had to do. And he made the drill instructors aware of it, and of course they really thought he was faking. The nurse checked him out and said he was all right, checked his vital signs, and they sent him back to run. And of course later on, you know, he stopped again, and they began to knee him, strike him, beat him, and they were shoving ammonia capsules up his nostrils. And eventually the young man, with all they were doing to him, he eventually collapsed. He was, at that point, 911 was called, and he was taken to Bay Med Center, then later transferred to Sacred Heart over in Pensacola, where he was placed on life support, and he died the next day. So, of course, we feel that it was a great injustice because we don't feel that all that they did to him was necessary. We feel it was excessive use of force, as we even see today. I mean, again, this happened in 2006.
Yeah, 39 years.
Yeah, right. It's been close to 9 years ago. And here today, yes, we're still dealing with excessive use of force by law enforcement as it relates to particularly African-American young men. I mean, it's happening all across our country. And it's so sad, yes, that we're still dealing with that.
Yes, with Trayvon Martin in South Florida, the young man who was killed by a security guard, Mr. George Zimmerman, and Michael Brown Jr. in Ferguson, Missouri. Those are the three. And Michael Gardner in New York City. And of course, there's a 12-year-old who was shot.
Right. You know, and unfortunately, so many others all across
the
country.
So many others never made the news, yes, sir.
Exactly, so many others. And so we are saying, even today, you know, that we just want justice for our children. You know, our children are our most valuable natural resource, and we love our children, and we want to invest in our children. But we just want our children to be treated fair. We know that they're not perfect. They're children, you know. They make mistakes. Sometimes they do things that they should not do. But, of course, that's true of adults. But they're children. So we you know, we are very much concerned, you know, about law enforcement, because law enforcement a lot of times are not even really trained to deal with our children and our young people. And, of course, You might be aware of the fact that there's a movement all across the country taking place. Young people are rising up regardless of race. They're rising up and they're coming together, and I think that's a good thing. And, of course, the NAACP has played a major role in that. And, of course, the theme that's being used all across the country is Black Lives Matter, and that actually originated with the NAACP. And so I think it's a good theme to say that Black Lives Matter. The truth be told, all lives matter, but because of our history in this country as African Americans, we want people to particularly know, after all of the things that we've had to suffer, the Middle Passage, slavery, segregation, and as you say, even today we're still having to address these issues. We want people to know that Black lives do matter, and that, again, our children are very important to us, and so we continue to stand for justice and equality for our children and for all children.
Yes. Okay. Yes, that's the whole point, though, of this show, having you on this show. It's happening too much. I'm glad it's in the forefront, and I know Trayvon Martin, Michael Brown Jr., and the young man, other young man who was killed in South Florida for playing loud music. Do you remember his name, sir?
Jordan Davis, I think, was in Jacksonville area.
Yes, Jordan Davis. The man Mr. Dunn,
right,
was found guilty.
Right.
If I'm not mistaken, am I correct? Okay.
Right. Eventually, with the second trial, the first trial, he was found guilty on the other young men who were in the automobile. But he was acquitted the first time with Jordan, but when the second trial was held, he was convicted that time.
Okay. All right. Okay, I understand that. So what I really want to talk about is the criminal justice system in America, the United States of America, the school systems too, the education. in the public schools. And my question is this to you. Is there a way, in your opinion, to stop all of this? I understand that you're a pastor, Dr. Rufus Woods, but you're also very intelligent, highly intelligent. And I'd just like to know, do you see any way of curbing this, of stopping the killings of the black youth? Because there's young female black women who are catching it too. I mean, do you see anything that could be done to slow it down at least?
Well, what we're doing as the NAACP, and this is our national organization, of course, as well as our state conferences and branches all across the United States. What the national has adopted what they call a strategic plan, which they call the five game changers. And what we're focusing on, they call them the 21st century game changers. And, of course, we cannot do everything, but the things that we're going to focus on and that we are focusing on in the 21st century is quality education for all of the children, quality health care for all, voting rights for all, and equal representation for all. And then fourthly, justice in the criminal justice system.
Yes.
And then economic sustainability, which basically means everybody should have a right to achieve the American dream. So these are the things that we are focusing on, because I think they're all really connected and related, you know, with education, because, you know, so many of our young people end up, unfortunately, being pushed out of the school system. A lot of our children are being suspended, they're being expelled, and they're being arrested, because now we have school resource officers on campuses, which we didn't have when I was in school, because, you know, the faculty and administration took care of things along with your parents, of course. But now we've got school resource officers, so we have an alarming number of our young people who are being arrested on campuses. They're being pushed out of the education system. We feel like it's like a strategy that's laid out. So we have to work. We call that the school-to-prison pipeline, and you mentioned about so many of the young people and even the adults, unfortunately, who are ending up in the criminal justice system.
Yes, sir.
Well, a lot of it starts with our children, because they're being pushed out of the educational system. We have a system that's failing our children, and as a result of them, when they're being suspended, expelled, or arrested, then they're not in the classroom. And if you're not in the classroom, then you cannot learn. You cannot continue the growth and the development of your mind if you're not in the classroom. And when kids are not in the classroom, then unfortunately, a lot of times they end up getting in trouble and doing things that they shouldn't do. Even if, you know, you've suspended them or expelled them, whatever the case is, even if they've been arrested and they're out for a while until their hearings or trials, whatever the case may be, they end up getting in trouble because they're going to find things to do. A lot of the times it won't be the things that they need to do. And so that's how, you know, so many of them end up getting into the juvenile justice system. And then as a result of ending up in the juvenile justice system, many times it won't be long before they will end up in the criminal justice system. And then when they come out, they don't have voting rights, a lot of them, because of you know, some of them have been convicted of felonies. They don't have the voting rights. Yes.
Dr. Woods, I just want to say one thing. I'm not trying to stop about the voting rights.
Yes, ma'am.
I need you to say this. In order to be on a jury, don't you have to be able to vote? Is that true?
I think that is true. I do believe that. We'll have to verify that. But I think that in order to serve on the jury, you do have to be eligible to vote. I don't think you would be considered for jury selection otherwise.
See, and that's the whole point. They've got mass numbers of black people going to prison, men and women. And then when they serve their time and pay their dues, they're punished again. You get what I'm saying?
Right. They don't have the voting rights, and a lot of them can't get jobs because
they can't stay in certain places. Yes, sir.
Right, they can't get jobs on top of that. You're right. I mean, they can't vote. You have no political power. I mean, and then economically, you have barriers and challenges because you don't have the education many times, and then you've been convicted of a felon. That's a lot of times the first question on applications. Are you a convicted felon or have you ever been convicted of a felon? And if you have to check yes, many times you will not be considered for the job. If you put no, and eventually they find out that you have, and even if you were successful in landing the job, once they discover that you were not truthful, then you end up being terminated. So that's why I said earlier, all of these things are connected. You know, it may not seem like it, but in reality, that's why we're focusing on these things that I just mentioned, the five game changers, because we feel these things are very, very important to the welfare and the survival of our people. And that's why we're focusing on these things.
Yes.
And we think it will make a difference. Now, I will have to say that when we talk about Black Lives Matter, we as African Americans also, there's some things that we have to do for ourselves, and particularly with our young people, you know, as it relates to the violence, because here in Panama City, in Bay County, unfortunately, from about May last year up until almost the end of the year, we had about 10 murders, unfortunately, young African Americans killing each other. And so we have to address that. We can't talk about the, whites killing blacks without talking about black-on-black crime. We have to deal with that issue. We cannot be silent on that. We have to address and deal with that issue, too. And we are dealing with that here in Panama City. And I think part of the way that we deal with that, we need to know that families do play an important role, because the first thing people say, well, it all goes back to the parents. Well, of course, we agree. It starts with the parent, but we cannot put it all on the parents. Parents do play a major role. They have a major impact on the lives of their children. But I grew up with what we call the extended family. Not only parents, your uncles, your aunts, your grandparents, your cousins, and then really people who really were no kin to you, that sometimes we called uncles or aunts or grandma or granddaddy. They were really no kin to us, no blood kin to us, but they were people who were in the community that we esteemed highly and we respected. And whatever they said was just as good as our mama or our mama or our daddy, you know, speaking to us. We need to go back and pick that up. As the old African proverb says, it takes a village to raise a child. So we need to go back to that we recognize we need each other, that we're not able to raise our children by ourselves. We need everybody helping us in the community to address the issues with our children. And linking our children with positive role models. I mean, a lot of times people say, the young people say they don't see any role models. Well, it's not because we don't have positive role models in our community. We do. We need to identify those role models and link them with our children, because a lot of times our children select role models who are really not the best role models. But we need to help link them with positive role models, and there should be some mentoring going on in our community. Then we have to teach our children self-love, that they need to love themselves, because if you don't love you, then certainly you won't love me. So if you don't care about yourself, you won't care about me. And if I look like you and you don't love you, then you would tend to hurt somebody that looks like you and remind you of you because you don't love you. So we have to teach our children that you have to love yourself and be proud of who you are. Be proud of who God made you to be. Then we need to teach them conflict resolution and anger management. I mean, a lot of them have issues. They're angry about things that have happened and continue to happen in their lives. So we have to teach them a better way, of dealing with things. Violence is not the answer, as Martin Luther King Jr. said. He said what Jesus said: if you fight by the sword, you will perish by the sword. So, Gandhi said, if we function with the ideology of an eye for an eye, then eventually everybody in the world would be blind. So we can't function with that. We have to find other ways of dealing with issues and help our young people know that there are many other ways of dealing with issues as opposed to violence. Violence is not the answer.
Yes, I agree.
So I think those are some of the things that we need to do and help teach our children some good work ethics, because we're dealing with a generation that wants success quick. They want quick success. You know, I guess we're living in this society now where, you know, with the internet, everything is fast. Yeah, and so that's the way they think life should be, and that's not the way life functions. I mean, we need to teach them some good work ethics that, sure, you know, they want valuable things. It's kind of materialistic, and I don't think there's anything wrong with desiring material things. We live in this world, but in order to get those things, you know, we need to teach them the value of earnest work. Because the way I see it, there are only a few ways you can get money. You either borrow it, you beg for it, you steal it, or you earn it. And borrowing and begging doesn't go very far. People will get tired of you very quickly. And if you steal, eventually it will be a matter of time before you get caught. So we need to teach them earning money is the best way. And we're talking about legal methods of earning money and teaching them good work ethics. Those are things that I think we have to teach our children. And you're talking about, you know, helping to deal with that issue of violence. I think that that will help. It's a complex problem, and there are no simple solutions. But I think we have to continue to work on it. But I think some of what I've shared are some of the things that we're working on here in Bay County, and that we want to help our young people as much as we can.
All right. I don't know if you want to talk about this, if you don't understand, but there was something in the school system that was going on in Panama City that you discussed when I was in Bay County about the school system, education.
Of course, like I told you, we're constantly dealing with the education system, and, of course, we, as I said, that's one of our game changers, quality education for all children. That's what we're working for here in Bay County. Now, just recently, the school superintendent made a recommendation, in fact, yesterday, to the school board about a pre-K program. They're trying to consolidate the volunteer, what they call a volunteer pre-K program. And I think they have six programs across the district, and they want to bring them together, consolidate them, and place them at one central location. That's what they're looking at doing. And so the word is that the school superintendent wants to use the Oscar Patterson facility, which Oscar Patterson is the last of our historic black institutions, schools here in Bay County. We don't have any left. I mean, Rosenwald is a historic school. It's been converted or repurposed as an alternative high school. And in that same facility, there's an alternative middle school known as C.C. Washington, because it's a very large facility. I think that facility houses better than 1,000. So they have actually two schools there, Rosenwald and C.C. Washington. Both are alternative schools. Rosenwald is the alternative high school. C.C. Washington is the alternative middle school. So the word is that he wants to repurpose Oscar Patterson as this pre-K consolidation center that he's talking about. And, of course, the community does not really want him to do that.
What?
Because, again, Patterson is the last school that we have. Right now it's a elementary school. You know, we have kindergarten through fifth grade there. And we would like to have a school still in our community. That's what we're saying to the superintendent.
Okay. It seems like, in my opinion, that they're trying to get rid of most of the primary historic black American schools. That's my opinion, though.
Well, that's what we believe too, and we're not really happy about it. They have closed just a couple of years ago. They closed A.D. Harris here, which is one of our historic black schools. They have closed that, and like I said, then they repurposed Patterson. I mean, not Patterson. I'm sorry, Rosenwald, and made it the alternative high school. Then they added C.C. Washington in that same facility, as I said. And so, what we fear not that we're opposed to preparing our pre-K students. I'm all for that. We know that our children do need some help. We are not saying that it should not be done. We're just simply saying we don't want it at that facility at Patterson, because we know that generally this is what happens. They you know, alternative programs they put in those schools, and then if things don't go right, then that will be the first school that will be on the chopping block, and we know that. That's been the way things have been conducted for a long time, so we know that, and we're not really happy about that. So we know that we need to stand up and speak out now. So I was at the school board meeting yesterday. I was at Patterson at a meeting that the superintendent called on Tuesday. So I've been involved in civil rights for, you know, probably 30 years. And so I've been around it long enough to know that we have to stay vigilant. We can't, you know, we can't go to sleep. Martin Luther King said sometimes we're sleeping through a revolution. So we can't afford to go to sleep. We have to be vigilant with what's happening in our community. So, you know, we're rallying our troops now.
Dr. Woods, we don't have like 3.5 minutes.
Okay.
You know, I live in the Panhandle too, the Panhandle of Florida.
Yes,
Northwest
ma'am.
Florida. I'm not that far from Panama City, Florida, Panama City Beach or Destin, Florida. I see things that are going on here within my own community that I live in, but a lot of times, you know, I stay silent, except when it comes to my radio show. And I have a question. If you're talking about the criminal justice system earlier and how education is important, it just seems like to me when you talk about the school to prison pipeline, like you said, that it's the strategy they have is actually like a blueprint, a plan.
Yes, ma'am.
And it seems to me like that the whole point of making the prison system a commodity of putting it on the stock market is so wrong to it's not even funny. I mean, it's nothing funny about it. I mean, that's evil. I mean,
well, yes, ma'am. I would concur. Yes, ma'am. It's real, and people can actually go on the internet and look it up. The school to prison pipeline. They can check it out. Actually, it started with Columbine, with the shooting at Columbine High School several years back, when those young men were building bombs in the garage of their homes, and their parents didn't know it, and their plans was to blow up the entire school. Now, they did some shooting. The bombs didn't go off, thank God, because many more people would have been killed. But the plan was to blow the school up. Thank God the propane tanks, I understand that they had, did not go off. But they ended up shooting about 13 students, I believe it was. After that, we ended up with zero tolerance in the schools. No weapons. If you bring any weapon, automatic expulsion. Drugs, automatic expulsion. And then explosives, automatic expulsions. But then later on, they started adding more and more and more and more. So now the least thing that a child does will get you suspended or expelled, which to me is just ludicrous with even some of the things.
Yes.
And like I said, people can go online, look up the school to prison pipeline. School to prison pipeline is happening all across America. There are examples out there. And so we need to stand up in our communities and address that, because it's happening. It's not only happening to African-American students. It's happening to Indian students and Hispanic students. So we need to stand up. As you mentioned about our voices being heard, Martin King said the world is not being destroyed by the voices of evil men, but by the appalling silence of good men. So good people need to stand up and speak out. Yes, ma'am. That's it.
Yes, sir. Okay, 10 seconds. Thank you, Dr. Ruth Wood, coming on Show Talk with Angela Butler.
thank you, Ms. Butler, for inviting me, and God bless you.
Thank you, sir.
All right.
All right. I'm going to hang up. All right, bye, sir.
Okay, bye.